This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
An experience that we have is that when we speak of things being great, it can quickly deteriorate into something that isn't that impressive. So when I use like a grammar checker, it says, you use the word great a lot. Try a word like amazing or marvelous. Great sometimes loses its impressiveness. There was a 1980s movie that featured that great Hollywood icon, Rodney Dangerfield, going back to school, and he's sitting in a college English class, and the English professor asks him, how would you characterize the great Gatsby? And he responds by saying, he was great. So I think in church life, when we get to things of eternal significance, they can easily lose their awe and wonder by getting stuffed into the category of being great. And here I am today coming to speak on something that we're calling the Great Commandment. So it can easily be like, oh yeah, sure, another thing that's great, good. During Holy Week, so that's the week where Jesus was crucified, buried, and rose. After Jesus had entered Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, some Pharisees tried to snooker Jesus after he had silenced his political, or he had silenced their political opponents. So he had taken care of one side of the aisle, and now he's going to take care of the other. So they get a lawyer who comes and asks him, this is Matthew 22, 36, teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And this is Jesus speaking. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. So Jesus says the greatest commandment on which all the law and the prophets depend is this commandment that we get today in Deuteronomy 6. And specifically, I want to direct your eyes there first. So Deuteronomy 6:4 says, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. So the opening word here invites these hearers to heed or to pay close attention to for the purpose of obeying. Like they need to have their ears perked up to this that they're about to hear. And it begins with a confession that the Lord our God, the Lord is one. There's a lot of different possible translations of this text. Another one is the Lord our God is one Lord. Another option is the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And all these, and a few others that are permissible grammatically, they all point to the same direction, to the uniqueness and to the supremacy of Yahweh, the God of Israel. The Lord is great. That's what we're to listen to. That's what we're to peek our ears up to. The Lord is great. And Moses continues to invite them from the Lord. God speaking through Moses. He invites them to love him with all of our heart, soul, and might. Our heart, soul, and might. So the Hebrew word that's translated heart often functions metaphorically for the seat of the emotions and the will. And equally, it often refers to the mind or the seat of thought. So the word serves to kind of comprehensively describe your inner being, the heart, the mind, everything that's inside of you. Love the Lord your God with all of that. And then we have the word soul, which literally and concretely means the throat or the gullet, the soul. It's used in a variety of ways throughout the Old Testament to refer to appetite or desire, to refer to life, to refer to a person as a living being, or the whole self. And that's what it's speaking to here. Your soul is the entire person. And then there's this final word, love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and might, or strength. It functions adverbially, meaning it's greatly, exceedingly. Its meaning is best captured in a word like resources. So all the physical strength you have, all the physical might you have, all the economic might you have, all the social strength or might that you have, and even physical things like that an Israelite might have owned, like tools or livestock, a house, something like that. So the progression of this, what is being said here, is apparent. All of Israel is called to love God without reservation or qualification. Moses begins with the inner being to the whole person and ends with all that one claims is their own. So everything in this bubble that is you, you're to love God with all of that. That's what the word is saying here. It's calling us away from ourselves to find our true fulfillment, to find our destiny, to find our all in the covenant-keeping God, the Lord. Loving this Lord with all that we are. This is the essence of the great commandment. We're to perk our ears up and see that there's no one like him. And then from all that we are, we're to love him. We're to respond to him in that way. That's the essence of the great commandment. Now, as you know, in Deuteronomy, we're at a crossroads. So the people are preparing to enter the promised land, and this command looms large for them. Is this going to be true for them or not? Is everything that they are going to be wrapped up in loving him, in serving this God supremely, or not? And that's really a question for us today in this room, right? Will God get all of us? Will God get all that I am? Or not. If we choose to be our own Lord, then we know what to expect. Like if you choose to live your life and say, well, I know God wants all of me, but this part I'm just going to hold on to because I have wants here. I have desires or appetites, and they're not going to be directed to him. They're going to be directed towards me. We know what that's going to get us. It's going to get us separation from him. It's going to get consequences. But with God, the covenant-keeping Lord, as the object of our lives, we stand to expect a particular way of life. There's things we can expect, like, and that's what chapter 6 is all about. So I started with the great commandment to see if God is this supreme and if we love him with all that we are, what can we expect life to look like? That's what chapter 6 is about. So the great commandment leads us down three paths, and let's begin in Deuteronomy 6. I'm going to read verses 1 to 6. So the great commandment leads us down three paths. So let's see how this flushes out. Here we begin in verse 1. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules that the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it, that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and all his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. This is God's word. Thanks be to God. So the great commandment leads us down three paths. And this first path that we open up with in this chapter is the great commandment leads us down the path of blessing. The blessing. 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 It leads us down the path of blessing. So in these opening verses, we almost get a what for from Moses. We get to understand what this is for. He's sharing God's heart for the people. And then as they go into the land to possess it, they're to orient their hearts to do what God's command. It's going to cause them to fear the Lord, to revere him, to honor him. And this is not only going to impact their own lives, but did you see that? It was almost tricky to read, like, and for your son, and for your son's son, and the implication is, and for your son's son's son, and for your son's 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 son, and on we go. Generations are to be affected by this. It should spread to children and grandchildren. And with these things comes a promise that their days may be long. Remember that? I grew up memorizing that in the King James out of Ephesians 6. You know, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise that it may go well with you on the days you live all your life on the earth. This is the same kind of language here. There's something at play when we are walking in God's ways, when we are loving him, and he has all that we are. There's a blessing that this leads to, a, a life that this leads to. And here, at the end of verse 2, these things come with a promise that their days might be long. So this isn't saying that we found the fountain of youth here in Deuteronomy 6:2, and that if you want to have a long life, this is what you need to do. And we know from the story of church history, we know from the reality of our own lives, that suffering is part of the Christian life. It's the norm. Like, people die early. People lose their life, and we scratch our heads and go, what is God up to? But this is giving us a general principle. So this isn't sort of some prosperity gospel promise. It's simply saying that, by and large, if our life trajectory is wrapped up in God, it's generally going to lead to blessing. It's a better life than if you choose to reject him. And so therefore, verse 3 invites them into that familiar pattern. We've seen this over and over again already in Deuteronomy, right? Hear the commands, do them, that it may go well with you, that you may multiply greatly, as God has promised, in the land flowing with milk and honey. And then in verses 4 to 6, we get the command we've already considered. Hear this, God is the supreme one. Love him with all that you are. And let these commands be on your heart. Your heart. Let these be what you know. Let these be what you're rehearsing. So I hope you can see and hear the blessings that are being hinted at. A land flowing with milk and honey. God keeping his promises. Long days, multiplying greatly. And it's something that seems almost counterintuitive, that God's best life for you doesn't come by letting you do whatever you want. It's so hard to realize this. God's best life for you doesn't come by letting you do whatever you want. We might think that that's the way it should be. We might think that if God really cared about me, he'd give me whatever I want, just as long as I'm trying to do more right than wrong. A lot of people in the world think this way, by the way. Not only are there followers of Christianity that think this way, but there are followers of world religions who think this is how it works, that if you burn your wheels to do more good than bad, you do that so that in the end, your works are the final determiner of success. But God goes one step further. God says, there's no way your works could ever be the determiner of your success, because you could never put together a good day if you tried. That's what God says. I know that's going to be the case for you. And so God says, I'm going to take you when you are most messed up. In this case, he's going to take people when they are slaves in Egypt and can't do anything about their lives. And I'm going to rescue you. I'm going to come through. And then, out of a love for you, I'm going to offer you a way to live that's going to lead to blessing. I mean, this is unbelievable that God would do this. That he would come after us when we are most far from him. That he would rescue us through his son and bring us into his family and then say, okay, now that you're my child, I have a way for you to live that's going to lead to all kinds of blessing. Will you walk in this? I mean, this is the kind of heart that God has. So out of a love for us, he offers us this way to live that will lead to blessing. So at the crossroads, are we going to heed this and walk in his way, walk in his blessing? Or now that he's rescued us, are we going to be like the children of Israel wandering through the wilderness and repeat those mistakes and say, well, yeah, it's great to be out of Egypt, but you can really do something about the food here in the middle of the wilderness, you know? Are we going to complain and grumble, and are we going to see he's come through in his promises? I want to walk in his ways. I want to walk in the way that he's outlined for blessing. So we might even think, well, I know God said that and promised this is going to lead to blessing, but I got some other ideas that I think would be a better way for me to live. So I'm going to try that out. So as God captures all that we are, as we see him supreme and as he captures all that we are and we love him, we're going to be led, first of all, down the path of blessing. Secondly, the great commandment, loving God with all that we are, leads us down the path of discipleship. Look at verses 7 through 9. So I almost stopped in mid-sentence, right? The end of verse 6, these things shall be on your heart. And then verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So we're led down the path of discipleship. The call to love God with all we are comes with a call to share him with others, to spread this news that a relationship with God is possible and what that means. We're to pass that on to others. We're to pass that on to children. So, and we're also, it certainly has an element that it relates to others, because we're not just, so do you see that in the text? Like, when you sit in your house, I mean, that's probably envisioning children, right? But when you walk by the way, I mean, certainly you're going to encounter someone by the way, right? Oh, by the way, you're going to encounter someone. You know, there's going to be people that you bump into as you're walking by the way, even with your children close to you. When you lie down and when you rise, okay, so when you lie down, you're probably not sleeping with a lot of people, hopefully. But when you rise, you're probably thinking about your work and what's going to happen that day, and it's envisioning that you're going to be out there with other people. So there's this impulse, so we're going to pass this on to others. And by the way, these are contrasts. This is a literary mode of writing, so whether home or walking by the way, lying down or rising, those are ways to show that, like, the totality of life is going to be sharing this news with others. So these contrasts, they point to all of life being an opportunity to show how supreme God is to us and all that we are. So yes, I think it also is meaning that in the good times, we're showing how awesome he is, and in the bad times, we're showing that, how awesome he is. In the good times, we're telling our children, you won't believe how God's blessing us right now. And in the times that are difficult, we're telling children in our home, hey, it's all right. God's still worth having. He's still supreme. I'm still loving him with all that I am. We're telling that to others, that he's the one we're clinging to. He's the one we're building our lives on. And as we're living this out, we get to bring others along in this. So yes, we should not be passive on the home front. So that's why we're, you know, I'm taking a portion of my week every week to dig up all these handouts from all these children classes. So you have those as parents. We want you to have tools in your hands at home to help your children know these things. So we don't want to just take that for granted. That's why we're trying to do programming for children so that they can know the gospel, so that we can build into them. But it's not just our job as the church, it is our job as the church. Like, all of us are called to this work. So we share that with others. But it also means we get a chance to share that along the way with people. As we rise and we go to live life in this world, we get to share that with others, that there's a God in heaven who's supreme, and he's calling for all of your life. He wants all of you. We're inviting others to love him in that way. Then we have these curious examples in verses 8 and 9, right? Of putting them on your hands or between your eyes or on the doorposts of your house. Does anybody have a mezuzah up? I'm just kidding. Okay. Or on your gates. This certainly includes more than getting the right kind of tattoo, having the right kind of jewelry, or the Martha Stewart department of the book of Deuteronomy, right? We're not just getting insight here as to what new designs we need to have on our bodies and how we could package all the Torah into a little packet right between our eyes so that we don't forget. What's he saying here? What's the point? It's this call, this path of discipleship that we've been called to, is to be everything to us. It's not to be some bonus add-on for those who are super spiritual. This is the calling for all of our lives. We do well to not forget it. So some of you do that. You put little things on your, like, that's the illustration, right? For if you look up a graphic for what it means to remember something, there's usually a string tied around a finger. And that's what's going on here. You know, bind this, put this on your hands. Like, remember this, don't forget. Or put it on the doorposts of your house so that when you go in, you're remembering. And when you go out, you're remembering. I have a call to spread this with others. I'm invited into other people's life. I'm to help the whole world see. This is the call upon us as a people. In fact, it seems like when Jesus was leaving earth, he said something really similar, right? All authority has been given to me in heaven and earth. It's almost like he thinks he's supreme. Well, he is. And he tells us to go and make disciples of all people. all nations, baptizing them, teaching them. It's almost like the same thing is playing out. It's the calling upon our lives. We're to make disciples of others. So we should make sure that those we come in contact with hear about God, hear his fame, hear about the life that he offers us. No part of life is exempt from this opportunity to move someone closer to God. That's the calling that he's putting out here. We're viewing everything through this lens. And yes, your home should look different than the other, than like the typical person. I mean, does the home of a believer in love with Jesus and the gospel look different than anyone else's home? And that would be really curious for you to think about. How could it look different if this discipleship impulse, if this supreme, God's supreme and I'm loving him with all that I am, what does that look like? Does it just mean we have really cool decorations and a scripture verse on the wall? Or does it mean like there's something at play in our lives that is infused into how our homes function and that we're using every opportunity to do this? Our homes, our lives should be platforms for showcasing life enraptured with God, that he's everything. Loving him with all that we are, it leads us down the path of discipleship. So we've got the call to he's supreme and love him with all that we are, and so that leads us down a path of blessing, a path of discipleship, and then the rest of the chapter is really we're being led down the path of worship. So let me begin reading in verse 10. And when the Lord your God brings you into the land that he swore to your fathers, to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, to give you with great and good cities that you didn't build, and houses full of good things that you did not fill, and cisterns that you didn't dig, and vineyards and olive trees that you didn't plant, and when you eat and are full, then take care lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. It's the Lord your God. You shall fear him. Him you shall serve, and by his name you shall swear. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the peoples who are around you. For the Lord your God in your midst is a jealous God, lest the anger of the Lord your God be kindled against you, and he destroy you from the face of the earth. You shall not put the Lord your God to the test as you tested him at Massah. You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes, which he has commanded you. And you shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may go well with you and that you may go in and take possession of the good land that the Lord swore to give to your fathers by thrusting out all your enemies from before you, as the Lord has promised. So we're being roped into this now, this path of worship. We're to see God for who he is, and we're to love him with all that we are as it relates to God himself. So their lives are to be drawn up to live for him, that he's the aim of worship. And beginning in verse 10, we see that he's a giver who's not to be tested. God will bring them into the land promised to their forefathers. He's going to give it freely. He's going to give them cities, houses, cisterns, vineyards, olive trees, allowing them to eat and be full. And they're not to forget what God has done to redeem them. Like, God's saying, I'm giving you all these things, and did you add an ounce of help to make that happen? No, I'm giving it to you. And then on top of that, I brought you out of Egypt. I've redeemed you. You should fear him and not be allured by other, I have a real good friend who calls them little g gods rather than the big g god. You know, little g gods. We're not to be allured by them. After all, God is a jealous God. He's perfectly righteous in his perfections. And he's not going to share his glory with another. He's not going to share his people with another. And he can also flex his anger if he chooses to, if they choose to test him like they did at Massah. What's Massah? So Exodus 17 is when this happened. And it's a huge deal for them because it's right on the heels of when God brings them out of Egypt. And the people start grumbling like, well, thanks for the redemption, but we could really use a drink of water out here in the desert. They start grumbling like that. And this is when Moses strikes the rock to get water. In other words, God's saying, like, do you really think I'm going to bring you out into the desert and not provide for you? But they were questioning God. Psalm 95, I think, says they were hardening their hearts against him. And so Moses is reminding them, don't play games with him like you did there. Don't test him like you did there. Don't play games with God. Step into doing and keeping what he's commanded is right and good, that it may go well with you, and all of his promises will surely be fulfilled. And on top of this, on top of worshiping the one who's given us all this, and we're not to test him, we're also drawn to worship the one who's redeemed us for our good. Look at how the chapter ends in verse 20. When your son asks you in time to come, what is the meaning of the testimonies and the statutes and the rules that the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and the Lord showed signs and wonders, great and grievous, against Egypt and against Pharaoh and all his household before our eyes. And he brought us out from there that he might bring us in and give us the land that he swore to give to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as we are this day. And it will be righteousness for us if we're careful to do this, all this commandment before the Lord our God as he commanded us. So this is kind of a fascinating development if you're walking through this passage. Because what were we just called to? What were we just called to? We were just called to discipleship. We were just called throughout this passage to pass this on to our children and to our children's children and to our children's children's children. We were just called to do that. And now God is saying, listen, you're going to get to a point in your life where your children don't understand what this is about. In other words, I know you're going to blow it everywhere you go. Like, I still expect that you're going to blow it. Don't get too proud thinking, we can do this. We can gut out this obedience. We'll really live it right and be impressive. God's saying, I know that's not going to happen. So, this fantastic development here. The people have been invited to be captured by God, and they share this with others, but Moses envisions that we're going to miss the point. God's saying, even in all that discipleship. And when these children come and ask, what's up with all these commands that God's given? Whew, what is up with this? These are a lot of commands. We're to respond with an important reminder. We were slaves. We had no hope of rescue. But God came and rescued us with his mighty hand. He showed Pharaoh who's supreme, and he did this that we might step into all of his promises for us. And so he's been working for our good. It's his people rescued that we obey. That's what God has done for us. Just to, when we were at our worst moment, when we could never put together the right things, he sent his son to rescue us. We were enslaved to sin, and he sent Jesus to rescue us. And Jesus now has come and brought us out, and in Jesus now, all those promises of God are going to be realized. He's going to surely bring them all to pass. And he's saying, so now, as my people, would you fear me for your good? Would you always know that I'm going to be working to bring you all the way home? I'm going to surely accomplish all that I've promised I'll do. Do you see all that in verse 24? Like, the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always. That's why he's given us these commands. That as redeemed people, we could walk in his ways, and it would be for our good, that he might keep us alive as we are this day, that he might bring us into the land. This is righteousness for us. That's verse 25. God knows what's best. It's the best path for us to walk in, and he's invited us to worship him with lives of obedience as the giver who isn't to be tested and as the one who redeems us for our good. So is your heart enraptured with the God of heaven? If not, if your heart is not enraptured with him, don't hear his heart for you to be obedience. He's not calling you to that. Instead, he's calling you to see that he is Lord of all, and he wants you to respond by loving him with all that you are. And then out of that is going to come this obedience. Out of that is going to come this living a life. What else could I do? Or as Romans 12, 1 and 2 put it, I beg you by the mercies of God to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. We walk in these ways. Out of this rescue comes obedience, trusting him to lead us into blessing, trusting him to lead us into discipleship, trusting him to lead us into worship. These things are for our hearts. They're for our hearts. So let's step out and worship. That's what he's inviting us to. So, in conclusion, we've seen the great commandment lead us down three paths, a path of blessing, a path of discipleship, and a path of worship. The God who's given the great commandment is unlike anyone you could ever imagine. He's perfectly just. He punishes every wrongdoer appropriately. And just think about that. He's a perfectly just judge. There's never a decision that God makes, you know, like our Supreme Courts or our appellate courts or our district courts or all the layers of courts that we have. There's times where decisions are made and people get upset about them. I don't know if you've heard this. That's not the case with God. He's perfectly just. He's always doing exactly what's right. He's always doing perfectly what's just. And at the same time, he's perfectly merciful. He's showcasing his goodness to desperately needy people. From the bench, this is how he legislates. He's merciful. I mean, he's gracious. He's giving all kinds of benefits to people who don't deserve them. And he's doing this himself. He sent Jesus Christ. He sent his son, God himself in the flesh, to live and die and rise again on behalf of sinners. And so today, believing in Jesus gives you forgiveness. It gives you free. He gives you freedom. He gives you redemption from all that enslaves you. So are you going to see him for all that he is and for all that he's done and love him with your heart and with your soul and with your strength from the inside out? Will you turn from your way to his? Will you believe him? Will you trust him? So that's one thrust and invitation of this great commandment is, like Jesus would say in the Gospels, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. My yoke is easy, my burden is light. Come to me. He's inviting us into that. And if we've accepted that call, if we love him supremely with all of our hearts, that he is supreme in our affections, remember that loving him supremely changes the trajectory of our heart, changes the trajectory of our lives from the heart. Like from the inside out, he's changing us. So we don't any longer obey to merit his favor. That's why we can come to the Lord's Supper table today with such freedom and grace, because he's not looking over like, okay, don't blow this today. I got my eye on you. He's already had his eye on his son. So we're free. Like, we're free. He's already punished him for all the sins we could ever commit. So we're not obeying to merit his favor or so that he's impressed with us eternally, but we obey because it's the instinct of our hearts now. He's captured us. He's rescued us. He's redeemed us. So let's embrace this call and step into all the blessings that he's promised. The best life that we can possibly have is not found in anything this world offers, but it's found in everything that God offers us through his son. That is the best life we can possibly have. Step into the path of discipleship. Consider how you can help others raise their esteem for God and live for him all the days of their lives. To see God as the supreme one of their lives and not something else. And enjoy the path of worship. Worship, I mean, worship's one of those dynamics that it's not just like we get to do this while we're here on earth, but we get to do this eternally, right? Giving praise to him. So we get to begin this wonderful living, this life of worship in the here and now. So love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and see what kind of life comes your way as you glorify and enjoy him forever.